Welcome to AMA Edgewise. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Today on Edgewise, we're speaking with Scott Belsky. Scott is the founder of Behance, a company that develops products and services for creative industries. Behance oversees the Behance Network, Behance.net, the world's leading online platform for creative professionals. The 99%, Behance's think tank and annual conference devoted to execution in the creative world, and Action Method, a popular online and mobile productivity application and line of organizational paper products. Scott was also included in Fast Company magazine's list of 100 most creative people in business. He is the author of the national best-selling book, Making Ideas Happen. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Scott, what are your principles of success?
One would be subtraction. Always trying to find things you can remove and reduce, whether it's processes within a company, features within a product. Some of the greatest successes have been the things we've decided not to do, and also the things we've decided to remove or reduce in the way we work. Another principle of success is the notion of optimization, constantly optimizing the way that we work and auditing how we spend our time and energy. It's very easy to know that you need to fix things that are broken, but it's more difficult to know that you need to improve things that are already working. Anything you're doing that works well, you tend to leave alone, when in fact, we also know that success comes out of building upon your strengths, constantly optimizing the things that work, because those are the things that are, in essence, your competitive advantage.
Do you ever have trouble maintaining these principles?
Yes. This is where it comes down to the notion of auditing. Teams have to look at the way that they're working and constantly revisit their principles. For our team, we have a series of tenets by which we want to work. And every year we send these around and ask people, do you still agree? Are we practicing what we preach? Are we always taking the contrarian's perspective? One thing we always try to do in our business is think about what's the other way of looking at it. Over the years, we have refined our own principles based on the size of our team, the nature of our industry, and that sort of thing. So principles have to be living. They can't be static. They have to constantly evolve. Otherwise, you start to work and live beyond them and they become less relevant.
Well, that probably has a lot to do with the culture in your business where people are comfortable enough to be able to say, I think you're doing something wrong and this is how we should change it without fear of repercussions.
Part of our culture is a lot of transparency and liberal exchange of feedback. And while we also have an annual review process, we always say there should be no surprises because all feedback should be exchanged in real time. And even as the CEO of the business, after certain meetings and certain things that I do, I'm often asking my colleagues, did anything I say not make sense? Is there anything that I should have done differently or better? Not only does that improve my own performance, but it also helps create a culture where everyone's asking that question of each other.
Okay. Now, 99% has a lot of interesting articles, and one of them was about the dangers of flat organizations. Behance is a flat organization. I'm just wondering if it's sometimes difficult to rectify your multiple ventures.
We definitely have defined leadership over everything here and defined not only responsibility, but accountability. So I don't think that a flat organization means there's ambiguity about who makes decisions on what. On the contrary, a flat organization is all about everyone knowing what they're responsible for and not having layers of management that ultimately lead to ambiguous decision-making or passing the buck because it's someone else's responsibility. Everyone here at all ranks of the company have ownership over something, and we try to empower people to make the final call on certain things. When we have to make a decision, we don't like saying, we'll push it into so-and-so's court. Our tendency is to say, let's get them in the room. Let's bring them in right now and let's figure this out.
What do you recommend so people aren't burdened by consensus?
It's important that you always have agreement on decisions that are made and that you fight it out, that a team is able to keep people engaged in the fight. If you have people in a room and everyone really cares about the product or the service or the business that you're debating about, and everyone has a different solution based on their expertise, inevitably you get into what could be called a fight, where people are debating and voices are raised, and it's like this multidimensional tug of war with each person yanking the rope towards them and in the process exposing you to their design space of opinion. And then what happens is someone says, you know what, I don't care anymore, whatever you guys think. This is too heated for me. That's really bad. That screws over our customer or our user, because all the best decisions are no longer being explored and we're losing possibilities. But you don't want to fight down to the lowest common denominator and become burdened by consensus. So how do you make sure you don't become burdened by consensus? A lot of the companies in experiential design that design memorials for museums are especially good at this. Especially one firm in particular called Think Design, based in New York, that did all the September 11th memorial stuff. With a project like that, imagine all the constituencies that they have to please. You have the general public, nonprofit foundations, designers, architects, all these different groups of people. Our question to them was, how do you make sure you have anything remarkable, something that moves people, when you're trying to get all of these constituencies to reach consensus on something? Their answer was, and a lot of folks said something along these lines, you need to find what your most distinguishing features are early on, the sacred extremes of the project, one person called it. And then when you're going in and getting consensus, you're saying at the beginning, I'm willing to compromise on pretty much every aspect of this, except these two things that I hold most dear. These are the two elements of this project that are going to be most distinguishing. So rather than follow with them and hide them and hope people don't notice those distinguishing elements, they lead with them in the beginning. They'll go to these constituencies beforehand and say, we've been doing some research, we've been doing a lot of deep thinking, and we've decided that there's one thing we want to do that's very different, but here's where it's been done before, and here's the background. They're pre-selling. And that's how we get agreement without getting burdened by consensus.
Now, I've seen you mention that by sharing and sharing quickly at the very beginning, you'll be more accountable.
Sharing ideas liberally is a best practice that we observed among many very productive, creative people and teams across industries. These people recognize that in all likelihood, they'll move on from idea to idea to idea without ever making any of them actually happen. When you tell other people what you're working on, you're more likely to be held liable or accountable for it. Some might say, you can't share an idea before it's ready. Someone else is going to steal it. But the benefits outweigh the costs. The more people who know your idea, the more accountable you're going to be. The more people are going to refine it. The more people are going to say, did you talk to so-and-so? He's doing something similar. Or you should hire my friend. He's interested in this. That's invaluable. And then the second thing to keep in mind is that if someone can steal your idea just by hearing it, and it probably wasn't a good idea to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Now, there tend to be people in meetings who just love to shoot ideas down, always want to be the contrarian. Is that a danger in sharing ideas too quickly before you can fully defend them if it's just an idea in your head?
I call it the role of the immune system in a team. The human body has an immune system that has to kill off everything new. That's how you stay healthy. Now, the one exception is if you were ever get an organ transplant, the first thing the doctor would do is suppress your immune system, so you can take on something new and change your body. It's the same thing in a productive creative team. On a day-to-day basis, in operations, getting stuff done, making deadlines, staying on budget, the immune system of your team is composed of the doers, the people that are always shooting stuff down, who are constantly saying, can't do that, budget, timeline. They're always finding a reason why we can't focus on that right now. And that's important because ideas often get us off track and over budget, and can put our companies at risk. Now, when you're trying to solve a problem, when you're trying to change your product or your process, that's when you're in brainstorming mode. It only happens 1% of the time. During that period of time, the people that always kill ideas have to suppress their tendencies, and the creatives need to be empowered in this part of the process. That's the healthy immune system of a team. The problem is that a lot of great companies and projects are started by dreamers. People who constantly come up with new ideas, they like to hire other dreamers because they're fun to work with. And then it's an intoxicated orgy of idea generation, and nothing ever gets done.
Which are you, a dreamer or a doer?
I think I am an incrementalist, the rotator from dreamer mode to doer mode to dreamer mode to doer mode, but that is not any better. The incrementalist suffers from creating too many things and none of them ever scale. So regardless of whether you are an incrementalist, a dreamer, or a doer, you need to always surround yourself with people that offset your tendencies. Our team has been together for 5 years. I've been very focused thanks to the people that I surround myself with who are either dreamers or doers, but round me off.
Scott, through Action Method, you have paper products, notebooks, and then you have online applications as well. So you're really into staying organized.
Right.
Last question is, what does your desk look like?
My desk is organized. I have my pile of stuff that needs to be processed, and everything is either entered into Action Method where I manage tasks, or it's entered into Evernote where I manage all of my references. It's entered into my calendar where I manage my time. Organization is all about ritualistic behavior. You have to be obsessive to make anything work well, creating times of your day where you go through stuff and ways you go through it. Organization is, in fact, the competitive advantage.
We've been speaking to Scott Belsky, the author of the national best-selling book, Making Ideas Happen. Scott, thank you so much.
All right, take care.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. You've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.